The Irish Times Inside Business Podcast, in association with EY, building a better working world.
Hello, this is Ciarán Hancock. Welcome to Inside Business. This week, I'll be looking at Aviva's plans to re-enter the Irish health insurance market and what that might mean for consumers. And in the second half of the show, Cliff Taylor of the Irish Times will decipher the messages that came out of the government's stability programme update, which set some budget forecasts for the next 4 years. First to health insurance, and British insurer Aviva's announcement last week that it would re-enter the Irish market for private health insurance later this year. This will be part of a joint venture with three Irish executives with huge experience of the health insurance market here. Aviva is already one of the biggest players here in terms of motor and home insurance, so what might it bring in terms of health? Will this deliver lower prices for hard-pressed Irish consumers? Will it bring additional benefits and coverage? And is it worth the hassle to switch for customers of VHI, Laya and Irish Life Health? Dermot Good of TotalCover.ie, a Loughton's company, is an expert in Irish health insurance and he joined me on the line. I began by asking him to explain why Aviva is coming back into the market, having exited in 2016.
Yeah, I mean, it was an interesting move that I have to say caught us by surprise. We heard a rumour a couple of weeks prior to this that there was somebody interested in coming in next year. We actually thought it might be another insurer altogether. And then the news broke that some people who would have been involved with previous insurance ventures such as Glow Health and Vivas are getting back into the market in conjunction with Aviva. And people will recall Aviva Health were in the market but left, you know, a number of years back, I think back in 2016, and Irish Life Health picked up where they left off. So it's really interesting to see that they're planning to come back into the market. You know, one would have to say health insurance in Ireland is a difficult market to make a profit quickly in. You know, you need to get scale very quickly. And you also need to get the right profile of membership so you don't, you know, you don't start incurring big claims early on. But I have to say the people who, you know, are associated with this new venture, they have a lot of experience in this market. And look, you know, for the little detail we have right now, this can only be good for all consumers, whether you're an individual, a family or a company. Because, look, any new company entering the market, for them to get that critical scale, they are going to have to be very aggressive, very competitive on pricing and on benefits. And, you know, that can only be good because right now we're in a period of, you know, soaring medical inflation where rates are going up 15-20%. So anything that maybe suppresses that can only be welcomed. And of course, when you have a new entrant who maybe, you know, exposes a gap in the market, the other insurance companies we can expect will move quickly to plug that gap. And then we get intense competition. So, you know, I welcome it. Unfortunately, we have no details whatsoever. I'm hoping they are ready to launch by September, October, because the peak renewal period in Ireland is literally from kind of November, December, January and February. That's when half the market renews. So it's a very interesting development, a welcome one on the face of it. We just have to wait and see what the details are. But a brave move, one has to say as well, given the challenges that the market faces right now.
Yeah, maybe let's just talk about the market, because we have three players at the moment, Laya VHI and Irish Life Health. I'm with one of those and I've been with one of the others. And I don't know, Dermot, my view is that there isn't an awful lot of competition in the market at the moment, certainly price competition. You're closer to it. What's your view?
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, it is interesting. So right now, look, your VHI with roughly 49%, Laya Healthcare now obviously just under 30%, and Irish Life Health picking up the balance. I mean, look, I remember the days when there was only 15 plans with two insurance companies and no competition really whatsoever. So definitely there is good competition in the market, but people really have to, consumers have to work hard to dig out those deals. And that's where there's more and more advisors in the market now, just because of the complexity and the confusion and so on. I mean, one of the things that has been highlighted in a number of reports is the low level of switching. So whilst a lot of people, I think only about 20% of people have actually switched between insurers, a lot of people tend to switch to different plans with the same insurance company. But I do think, and look, we have no insight on this, but if I'm guessing here, I would say that this new venture, they really want to stir the market up. I'm sure they would like to see that switching activity close to 50-60%. You know, I mean, I'm sure they want to highlight the fact that there is no loyalty. You don't get rewarded for being loyal to health insurers in Ireland. They're not allowed by law to reward you in any way whatsoever. So loyalty just doesn't exist. And now I think, you know, given the price inflation we're seeing, number one, given that VHI is retiring a lot of their older plans, about it, so that's going to impact about 150,000 customers who will have no choice now but to shop around. And, you know, we won't really know the details till we see exactly what plans this new company launches. But I think if I'm reading between the lines here, they believe that there isn't enough intensity, if I could call it that, in the competition, and they really want to stir it up. And also, you know, even with the challenges, like, the market is still growing. I mean, like, we now have nearly 2.5 million members insured in Ireland. Now, I think that's a function of the failings, the challenges of our public health system, despite the best efforts of those working there. So most people taking out private health insurance now, they do so because they just don't feel they can trust or rely on the public system. But, and I don't see any end to that anytime soon. So I think the numbers will continue to increase, albeit the rate of new membership has slowed. It was 3.6%. It's now down to, I think, 1.6%. So the numbers of new members joining is slowing down. Once again, not surprising given the way prices have gone. But there is still really good competition out there, but you have to dig out the deals. I mean, for example, you know, I see one company right now has a free cover offer for children under 18. But if you don't phone up that insurer and ask for the deal specifically, you won't necessarily be offered it. You know, even though all the insurance companies have increased their rates, what people don't realize is that buried amongst the detail, they usually keep a handful of plans really sweet, really attractively priced, because they have to look after their biggest corporate clients who are coming up for renewal. Once again, if you don't phone the insurance companies, if you don't ask the right questions, if you don't put them under pressure with very specific questioning, you will miss those deals. So, you know, I think there's still a lot of inertia in the market. I won't call it complacency. I think it's more because people are fearful of making the wrong decision and reducing, yeah, you know, their benefits, and therefore they're more likely to maybe renew as is. But I think that's going to change now, because when rates start going up 15-20%, a lot of people who might want to renew on the same plan will no longer be able to do so simply due to affordability. So there's a lot of moving parts in the market right now, and I think maybe that's what this new entrant, they're going to stir things up more, and we don't know what gaps they believe they've identified, but I'm sure they're going to expose those pretty quickly when they do launch.
Dermot, which company is offering the free childcare for under 18s?
So Leia Healthcare has a deal right now whereby if you have two or more children under 18, and then simply, you know, what you do is you phone up and you basically maybe put the eldest child on a plan called Inspire Plus, and then you put the remaining children on a plan called Flex 125 Choice. And that means your remaining children will be free for the next year. So if you're already a Leia member, you can avail of that deal if you don't have a free covered deal already. Or if you're coming up for renewal, you have three or four young children under 18, you're probably paying 200 to 300 each with the other insurance companies. That's a deal, you know, really well worth looking at. I mean, I mentioned some of the deals that the insurance companies have in the market right now, like in particular, Leia Healthcare and Irish Life Health. So, for example, Irish Life have these health guide schemes. So they have a plan called Health Guide 2, which is 1,420. It's a super semi-private corporate plan. Now, when I mention these corporate plans, you know, listeners need to realize, yes, they're designed for the corporate market. Anybody can join these plans. It doesn't matter what the name is or who they're targeted at. Leia Healthcare have another really good corporate scheme called Inspire Plus, which is about 1,540. Because of VHI's latest price hike, you know, VHI's best deal is probably the likes of their company plan plus level 1.3, which is also about €1,540. Consumers need to be careful here. I see VHI have launched a number of lower cost corporate plans, which on the face of it give very good cover. But what we've noticed that is on a lot of these plans, they have removed the urgent care benefit for Swift Care, which is a really important benefit now. So at the moment, if you have that benefit, you go into a Swift Care clinic, you maybe pay €75 and that's it. If you offer one of these cheaper plans, you may find that you can still use SwiftCare, but you have to pay for everything. So people just once again need to be very, very careful. And on the message to all consumers is that if you're looking at an alternative plan, either with the same company or with somebody else, you know, always get them to explain what the differences are compared to your existing plan. And always tell them, and I know this goes completely against the Irish psyche, you know, tell them everything. Tell them what you're using your cover for. Tell them what procedures maybe you're planning or are pending. You know, what consultants you're attending, what MRI scan centers are located close to you. You know, tell them everything. And then in fairness to the insurance companies, if you probe and you ask very specific questions, they must give you very specific answers. And then you'll know exactly whether that plan you're considering is suitable for you or not. So it's really, I know a lot of people like to do this online. Just bear in mind, if you use some of these comparison sites and if you go and buy online, that's what we call execution only business. It means the insurance company is not giving you any specific advice, which means you are completely responsible for the choice you make. And because you haven't had a conversation with them on the phone that's recorded, it means if you pick the wrong plan, if you miss a benefit reduction or something like that, you really have, you know, you've nowhere to go because you are responsible. So we always recommend to people, even if you find a great deal online, phone up the insurance company, get them to confirm that everything you've assumed, everything you've checked out is correct, and then you can switch with confidence.
Dermot, you mentioned the need for people, customers, to ask the right question. But how do you go about that? Because a lot of consumers wouldn't necessarily know what questions to ask in terms of a health insurance plan. And also, you might ask a couple of questions and think, well, I've kind of got it covered off. But the plans are so complex and there are so many of them out there. Inevitably, you're probably not asking the right questions.
Yeah, let me break this down. I mean, let's just say somebody already has existing cover. And the plan, they get the renewal in and it's too expensive. And by the way, I would tell everybody now, brace yourself for increases of up to 15%, maybe higher. And really what you should do is that the best starting point is, what is your budget? So forget about what they've quoted you for the coming year. What is the budget that you can afford to pay? It might be what you were paying last year. So let's just say last year you were paying $3,000 for your family and now you've got a bill for $3,750, which you just can't afford. You simply phone up your existing insurance company and you basically challenge them, in other words, to find you the closest equivalent plan to what you currently have that costs no more than €3,000. That's it. And sit back and let them, and by the way, tell them you want them to look across all their plans. You don't care whether they're corporate plans or you don't care what the name is. €3,000 is your budget and you want something that gives you as much or as close to what you currently have. And as I say, sit back. Now, they may say to you, well, look, you know, Dermot, rather than holding you on the phone, we'll send you out some details. No, no, you keep them on the phone. Okay. And then when they come back to you, because they now know that you've done your homework, that's a very specific question. And they now have to look across all their plans. So whatever they then come back to you with, so let's just say they have something that they suggest is very similar to what you have and it's no more than €3,000. Your next question is, great, now tell me exactly how does that compare to what I have? What am I losing? What am I gaining? What stays the same? And bear in mind, they will have your claims on the screen in front of them. So if when they answer that question regarding the differentials, this really sounds promising. Your next question should be, by the way, now you see all my claims that I've had over the last couple of years. If I was on this new plan that you're proposing, would all those claims be paid pretty much to the same level? And once again, the agent you're dealing with will have to give you a very specific yes or no answer. And if all that is promising and you like what you hear, well, then, you know, you go ahead and you switch to that plan. And by the way, the final thing would be just to confirm again that there's no other plan that you've overlooked, no other corporate plan that gives me a better deal than what you're proposing. Once again, they have to say yes or no. And the people who do that every year, they get the best deals. Now, let's just say you're not happy with what they're offering you, that the reductions in benefit are concerning. You simply repeat that process with the other two insurance companies. So if you were with VHI and you couldn't find something that gave you what you needed, you phone Laya Healthcare and you phone Irish Life Health and you repeat the exact same process with them. You tell them what plan you have right now. You tell them your budget and you challenge them to find you the closest equivalent plan to what you currently have that fits that budget. In some cases, you will actually get better cover than what you currently have. And by the way, the older the plan is that you currently have, the stronger the probability it is that you're going to save money for maybe the same cover. And that's, they're the steps that you go through. You simply repeat that with the other two insurance companies and don't be afraid to tell them everything. You know, any existing conditions you have, any concerns you might have, you know, tell them everything, because the more specific you are with your questioning, the more specific their answers might be. And that's the procedure. Now, if you're still confused, or if you're concerned, or you're just not happy that maybe you've covered everything, and I'm really looking at older members now who get confused by the jargon. They're easily put off. They're easily confused. They are very concerned about any changes to their cover, because obviously they probably have underlying conditions and are probably using their cover. I would say to them, you know, a son, a daughter, a trusted friend, neighbor who's very comfortable engaging, you know, those people who love engaging with insurance companies, you know, get them to hold your hand, get them to be with you whilst you're on the call with the insurance company, just to make sure that there's no ambiguity. Yeah. Because I find the insurance companies sometimes are very good at planting little seeds of doubt, because, you know, they know that if there's any doubt, the member will be more inclined to stay exactly as they are. And the other thing I would say is anybody who's thinking of joining, so yes, there's 300 odd plans. You know, the best starting position for any new members is, once again, your budget. So, you know, if you have €1,000 to spend, you simply phone up all three insurance companies and you tell them, I have €1,000 to spend, and challenge them to basically what is the best plan they have that basically costs no more than that amount of money. Now, some listeners will think you should never tell them your budget. But you see, the great thing with health insurance is, unlike car insurance and home insurance and all the other insurances where the price can vary and you need to haggle, there is none of that with health insurance. The prices are set centrally. So, you know, for example, the Benefit Access 300 with Irish Life Health is 1,070. You know, the Enhanced Care 350 scheme with VHI is approximately €1,130. And the Signify scheme with Leia is €1,130. These are three really good mid-level schemes. That is the price. So, you know, it doesn't matter whether you're 26 or 35 or whatever, that is the price. So by you telling them
Dermot,
your budget,
how can you be certain that the insurance company, when you ring them up, that they're actually giving you the correct information, that they're not simply directing you towards a plan that suits them rather than suits you?
Yeah, and look, that's a really good question. I mean, and the best way of doing that, so once again, the insurance companies, to be fair, they know all the calls are recorded. They know they are bound to give best advice under the Consumer Protection Code. And to be fair to them, they do, but it really centres around your questioning. So if I phone up and I basically say, there's my budget, what is your best plan that fits that budget? And they come back to me with something, my last question is going to be, okay, before I sign up for that now, there is no other plan that you've overlooked or missed or whatever that gives me better cover than that. That is your best deal at that price range. They have to say yes. Now, then what will happen is, if 3 months later you find through a friend or a website that there was another plan that you were never offered, you will now be able to go back and have that addressed by the insurance company because they didn't give you, let's just say, the correct advice. So you do have recourse. But to be fair, the insurance companies, you see, the one question you never ask when you phone up the insurance companies is, what do you recommend? Because they will recommend the most expensive plan. They will recommend a consumer plan rather than a corporate plan. And you've got to bear in mind, you know, when you phone these insurance companies, and look, I have sympathy for their agents as well, because by the way, when you phone them up, the person you're speaking to, you might think they know all their plans. No, they don't. Okay. You could be speaking to somebody maybe who might know 10 or 15 of their plans. They are relying on their quotation system to prompt them with whatever plans their system is programmed to recommend. That's why you have to be very specific in your questioning. Challenge them, you know, to find the best plan for that price, and make sure you mention that they must check all their plans, corporate plans or whatever. But you know what though? And some people will say, he would say this, for anybody who's in any doubt, anybody who really doesn't want to go through that process with all three insurance companies, you know, there are loads of brokers out there who will do this for you. And the reason why I would say that is that, you know, the brokers who specialize in this area, they know all the corporate deals because they're involved in beauty parades and selection processes all the time. So often we will give somebody the name of a plan, and when they phone up the insurance company, the agent they're speaking to, so they'll ask for the plan specifically by name. And often the agent will say, oh, that's a really good plan. I haven't come across that before, because when they plug it into their system, up it pops, you know. So really, it's really about your specific questioning when you phone the insurance companies. And if you have a budget in mind, that'll mean you will not be offered plans that just don't fit your budget or whatever. But it's really important you do this on the phone.
Dermot, you mentioned earlier that VHI is cancelling policies for about 150,000 policyholders, I think it is. Why is it doing that?
Yeah, so VHI over the last 18 months to 2 years, they have been streamlining their plans. So where there are plans where there's duplicate, they have been launching new plans and, I suppose, retiring the older ones. And some people would say that they, you know, they wish the other insurance companies would do that as well, so we don't have as many plans. Now, I suppose, be careful what we wish for, because, you know, as I say, we now have over 330 plans, but buried in there are some phenomenal deals that if we only had a, you know, a much smaller plan base, you'd probably find there would be less of those deals. But yes, VHI are retiring four of their oldest plans. So, I mean, I'm working in this industry now a long time, but the original plans from VHI were the old plans A, B, C, D and E. The only ones really left are variations of plan B, and they're now called Help Plus Extra and Help Plus Access and so on. Those plans are on the market over 30 years, and therefore they've been impacted by every price increase over that period. So not surprisingly now, VHI has decided to retire these plans from the 1st of May, but on a renewal basis. So it will be phased in. I think a lot of the people who will be impacted by this change will have already renewed in January with VHI. January is a very busy month, particularly for a lot of VHI's older members. So they won't be impacted until next January. So time is on their side. They have plenty of time. But it is going to impact, you know, as I say, anything up to 150,000. And these are predominantly VHI's older members. And these are people who've, for whatever reason, fear, inertia, you know, they maybe have serious underlying conditions and they don't want to take any chances with their cover. And they are people who've remained loyal to VHI throughout. They now will have to make a decision because their plan will no longer be available from renewal. And I think that's going to cause a lot of anxiety and stress for these people, because they maybe aren't used to shopping around, or maybe just have no desire to shop around, but they will have to change their cover. Now, the good news, if I can put it this way, is that VHI have another set of plans that they launched a couple of years ago called Advanced Care. There's eight variations of that plan. And anybody who, for example, wants to remain with VHI on a similar plan, paying, by the way, similar premium, and I'll talk about that now in just a moment. So they will have alternatives from VHI that they can migrate over to. So if they do nothing, will their cover be dropped? Absolutely not. VHI will simply default them onto the new plans. But to give an example, though, Help Plus Extra, the old B options with VHI, that plan was €2,950 in March of last year. Today, it is €3,400. So a retired couple are going to have to find an extra €900 just to stay on that plan anyway. And they're now going to be offered a plan from VHI called Advanced Care Extra Day to Day. But that plan today is €3,540. So, you know, the increase won't be €900 year on year. It could be well over €1,000. And really what I would say, I suppose my message to all these members is that, look, given that your plan is being retired, why wouldn't you just take a bit of time to check the open market and see, before you automatically default across to the VHI plan, why not check out what is available from the other insurance companies? And I'm particularly suggesting they look at Laya Healthcare here, because a lot of the members on those plans that are being retired, they want full cover for the hip replacements and knee and shoulder replacements and cataract removal and things like that. Laya Healthcare has a suite of plans that provides that cover, that exact cover. And some of their plans, like, they start from €1,800 up to, I mean, they have a plan there called Momentum, €2,370. I would encourage anybody who's on that Health Plus Extra paying potentially €3,400, that, you know, if you can potentially save €1,000 per adult. And by the way, these are still superb plans. It just happens they're only on the market a number of years, and therefore the pricing is much more attractive. You know, a retired couple potentially saving €2,000 and still having superb cover, I just think that's worth looking at before you automatically accept what VHI are going to offer you.
Okay. Finally, Dermot, you mentioned that the health insurance companies can't reward your loyalty as a health insurance company, but presumably they can reward your loyalty as a health insurance company in other areas. So, for example, when Aviva come into the market, they offer home insurance, they offer car insurance and other insurance products as well. AXA too, and AXA owns Laya now. So presumably they can use their health insurance customer base or their motor and in reverse, their motor and home base to incentivize across the suite of products.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, this is going to be really interesting to watch what transpires in the market now. So AXA, as you know, exactly as you said, have acquired Laya. And AXA, you know, been very active in the market here, particularly in the motor insurance and home insurance. So, you know, we're looking to see, will there be any kind of bundled product offerings where they might now start targeting the nearly 700,000 Laya members with home insurance and other deals from their product suite. Now, it was interesting. We expected something similar when AIG acquired Laya, but that never transpired. You know, so it'll be really interesting to see what exactly AXA does or offers their new Laya membership base, and also what they might do in terms of health insurance offerings to their own, you know, motor and home insurance clients. And I'm sure, look, you know, once again, reading between the lines, I'm sure Aviva are watching this very closely as well, because obviously they're very active in that general insurance space. And maybe that's one of the, you know, one of the motivations behind their involvement in the new deal with the fourth entrant, to make sure that that their customers don't lose out. So it'll be very interesting to see exactly what added value is introduced by way of that bundled product offering. Now, it's not straightforward because, you know, health insurance is only a 12-month contract, whereas the car insurance...
Well, all insurance is, I mean, car insurance is a 12-month
They are typically... I know there was one insurance company there some time back was offering kind of 2-3 year deals for car. I don't know if that ever took off. But bear in mind, the thing with car and home insurance, these are risk-rated products. You know, so obviously, the more you claim, you know, your premium should reflect that. And, you know, other risk factors can impact on your premium, such as age, location. So it'll be really interesting to see who basically tackles or targets that market and what the offerings look like. Once again, you know, this idea of the rising tide, I just think it's going to benefit all consumers. We just don't have any details yet, but it's an interesting one to watch.
All right, Dermot Good, thank you for joining us.
My pleasure.
We're going to take a short break now. When I return, I'll be talking to Cliff Taylor of the Irish Times about the government's latest budgetary forecasts. Back in a few moments.
How can harnessing the power of AI help drive your business? At EY, we combine leading business expertise with cutting-edge technology and capabilities. Working directly with you to plan your strategy, we will accelerate your AI-enabled transformation. To learn more, visit ey.ai/IE.
Welcome back. This is Inside Business with Ciarán Hancock. Earlier this week, the government published its Stability Programme update. This is an update of budgetary forecasts provided to the European Union, and it predicts a surplus for this year of €8.6 billion and a warning that the economy has slowed. Cliff Taylor of the Irish Times has been through the document and he joined me in studio to help make sense of the vast array of numbers included in the document. I began by asking him how much of the budget surplus might be used to fund tax cuts or additional spending on key public services, especially as €6 billion is already earmarked for two sovereign funds.
Yeah, an incredible amount of figures in the department's forecasts. And, you know, we've got into this cycle now where they deduct what they estimate to be the windfall element of corporation tax. And there's another set of figures based on that. And it's confusing. And it's also confusing now because of the money that's going to be set aside for these two new funds. So the top line figures, the figures we generally operate on are the EU borrowing measure, the general government, the GGB as it's called, which is a measure of the total amount the government borrows each year or has as a surplus each year. And it shows a surplus for this year of €8.6 billion and relevant then for the budget in October, a forecast of 9.7, you know, close to €10 billion for next year. So that shows an underlying strong position in the Exchequer finances.
So we've €8.6 billion more in receipts than we're spending this year. That's
exactly.
The forecast.
That's basically the forecast and the same for next year. Now, this being the budget, it's never entirely straightforward. And one of the things that complicates matters in terms of kind of getting to grips with it this year are the establishment of these two funds. So there's the Future Ireland Fund, which is the long-term wealth fund, which is going to start paying some bills from the middle of the next decade, if all goes well. And we've the Infrastructure, Climate and Nature Fund, I think I got that right, which is a shorter-term fund to support investment in climate and also to help state capital investment stay strong if the economy has a bad few years. So with those two, $6 billion going into those two funds next year. So let's look at next year. So
the is that $6 billion of the 8.6 or is that before?
Yeah, well, so let's look at next year. So next year is the forecast is the guts of $10 billion in round terms, 9.7 for the surplus. The $6 billion comes off that, if you like, in terms of cash anyway. So that is going to reduce the room for manoeuvre on budget day fairly significantly. Now, there'll be some add-backs and pluses and minuses there as well. But I think the underlying message is that there isn't as much money there for a pre-election budget as a lot of people have been kind of throwing around in terms of promises. It's very hard to put a figure on it because there's all kinds of things coming and going in the figures. For example, the government has set aside various contingency funds for next year, and that's allowed for, in the figures, $4.5 billion in the main kind of contingency funding. And they could add some of that back in. They've allowed for a lot of money to go into the social insurance fund, so some of that could be used to pay higher welfare payments next year. So it's a little fudgy, if you like, in terms of how this is going to work out on budget day. And we won't know till the summer economic statement, which comes out usually in early July, which will say, look, here's where we start off on budget day. But I think that figure is going to be a good deal less than the headline surplus of close to $10 billion. And I think it's going to lead to some difficult enough decisions. I don't think, you're not talking about an austerity budget or a cutback budget, but in terms of the expectations for a pre-election budget, I think certainly Michael McGrath and Pascal Donoghue will be trying to pare those back fairly significantly into a more kind of what you might call a pre-COVID budget, a budget that has a bit of tax and a bit of extra spending, but doesn't have a lot of the add-ons that we've seen over the last few years, like energy credits and double.
Does that square with what Fianna Fáil has been saying over the past couple of weeks in terms of what it wants to do, let's say, on the pension, which it wants to increase, on child benefit, it wants to give an extra tenner a month on that. It wants to reduce the tax burden for workers. Possibly you'll get the first $20,000 tax-free, essentially, and, you know, inflation-proof those moving into the higher rate of tax. And more besides. I mean, there was a lot more besides that's been said over the past couple of weeks. And that's, I mean, I think Eamon Ryan did a back-of-the-envelope calculation. I saw it somewhere that he was estimating it's costing $2 billion.
Yeah, it wasn't far off it. And of course, Fine Gael had their own promises from Simon Harris as well, which were around some of the same territory in terms of pensions and taxes. I think the answer is it's going to be difficult. I think, yes, there will be scope for a tax package. Yes, there will be scope to increase tax credits, tax bans, tinker with the USC. Yes, there will be scope to increase welfare rates. But a fair amount of that is going to go to compensating people for the impact of inflation on both tax and welfare. And there would be a limited enough room for manoeuvre, I would think, to actually boost people's living standards. And I think where the row might be is over whether the once-off measures, which have already been repeated twice, a lot of them, are going to be repeated again. I think that's going to be the difficult bit.
We're not getting a straight answer on that, are we?
No. Interestingly, Micheál Martin said in his, not in his speech, but in subsequent interviews, I think it was an RTE interview, on the Sunday after the Ardesh, that he favoured a repeat of the energy credits, roughly on the same level as last year. Now, they cost north of $900 million last year, and added, there were a whole range of other once-off measures which brought that up to closer to $2 billion. I don't think there's room in the figures for next year's budget to do those again and to do the tax and welfare, unless you really start to loosen the purse strings beyond what I think the budget ministers are going to want to do. So I think that's where the row is going to be. I suspect, strongly listening to ministers on all sides, Eamon Ryan, Micheál Martin and indeed Pascal Donoghue, over the last week or so, that following the Ardesh palaver, whatever you want to call it, promises, everyone is kind of trying to pull back a bit and trying not to have the row yet. But a row there will be, and it will come, I think, before the summer economic statement, when I would anticipate that Michael McGrath and Pascal Donoghue will put before their cabinet colleagues a room for manoeuvre, which is a good deal less than everyone had been expected. And people will say, oh gosh, is that the consequence of putting money away for the future in these two funds? What are we going to do? Now, this being a budget and there being money hidden in various places, I think money will be found to do things.
I was just about to say the arithmetic of the income tax receipts might work in their favour because we're pretty much at full employment now. And the income tax receipts that are coming in every month are very, very strong. Could get stronger, especially with the pay increases that are being pushed through for various people.
Likewise, we don't know where the corporation tax is going to go.
Corporation tax, yeah. Now, that could go either way, I guess.
Absolutely. But there could be an out there for them, absolutely. And with significant surpluses, even though money is going into the funds, there's always, you wouldn't say money hidden behind the sofa, but there's always ways you can find money. For example, I think Pascal Donoghue and Mike McGrath, I suspect, will argue against going again with the once-off measures. And they say, look, cabinet colleagues, inflation has come down. Living standards aren't under the pressure they were. In fact, the Department of Finance says living standards are going to increase this year before any budget measures because inflation has come down and people are getting a wage increase. So people feel a bit better off. We don't need to be doing energy credits again. We don't need to be doing double child benefit weeks again. Maybe we do need some special once-off measures or ongoing measures better still to help people on lower incomes who are still facing energy bills that are well above what they were. But we don't need to go again with the big universal measures. It'll be interesting to see what the rest of the cabinet says on that. I mean, you could, if you wanted to find a way around it, pay money this year out of this year's surplus for one more round of energy credits before the general election, you know, if you wanted to be cynical about it.
Why do some of these things
And say that that's the end of it. But I don't know. I'm only speculating here, but you can always find a bit of wriggle room there, and I'm sure a bit of wriggle room will be found. But I don't think it's going to be the bonanza that maybe
you were talking about
the double
week of child benefit, for example.
Yeah.
And we've had that as part of these one-off measures. Now, if you add a tenner to the child benefit every month, that's what, 120 quid per year, which is a bit less than actually a once-off. You know, here's an extra week of child benefit.
Absolutely.
So one kind of cancels out the other, maybe in some regards in relation to that. What's your feeling on corporation tax, Cliff? Because we've been hearing for the past two or three years now warnings that corporation tax might not be sticky, that some of it could be windfall in its element, and that we might lose some of it to other countries. And yet, you know, it has remained very sticky. It was a record level again last year. And also the rate's gone up to 15% for large companies. So I know that doesn't kick in really until 2026, but nonetheless, it suggests that more corporation taxes is coming, higher levels of corporation tax will be coming to us down the road.
Yeah. I mean, who knows? I suppose is the honest answer to that. I think actually probably Michael McGrath has framed it reasonably well in that he is kind of, his line is that the period of big overperformance of corporation tax may be over. So we kind of forget that just before the pandemic, corporation tax was getting, what was it, 11, 12 billion a year? It's doubled since then in the few years since just before the pandemic. I mean, and every year it's been a couple of billion ahead of expectations. So while it may not fall off a cliff over the next few years, perhaps nor can we expect it to outperform and outperform and outperform and dig the exchequer out of, well, not dig it out of a hole, but give it this extra room for manoeuvre that it has been giving. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's the best way to think of it. I find it hard to get to grips with the figures from the Department of Finance and the Fiscal Advisory Council and Central Bank and whoever, all of whom are saying that, you know, the guts of half of it may be kind of windfall in the sense that it's hard to link to economic activity in Ireland. And while that's the case, you know, still, is that money going to disappear overnight? It's hard to see it, you know. You could certainly see a problem hitting a particular one of the big payers, just theoretically.
Apple.
Whatever.
Or Apple could up sticks.
Microsoft.
It's unlikely.
Whatever. It's unlikely. Or one of these companies could change their tax arrangements. They could move their IP somewhere else, which isn't as straightforward as just a click on a computer mouse. But nonetheless, we've seen before that it can be done. You know, so all of those things are possible. And, you know, you could get a couple of billion off in a particular year, which would hurt. or just, you know, might it go from 24 billion a year to down to 20 billion? But it's very hard to see half of it being, you know, at risk in the short term, as kind of the department have warned. But I suppose that's their, look, that's their job. They're trying to keep the politicians in check. Mm. But I mean, the honest answer is, I don't know. I don't think anybody else knows either. So from that point of view, it would be stupid to bet the farm and use that money to increase health spending or ongoing spending in any particular area, because then we'd end up like we were in the financial crash, or we could.
Yeah, we're still facing pressures, mind you, within the European Union, aren't we, about this whole issue of corporation tax?
Yeah.
Because one strand of the OECD process on this has essentially broken down. That's to how to allocate money per country and so forth.
It's messy, and the EU is trying to bring back in its own way of doing it.
We could have France, for instance, introducing a digital tax.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which would impact us, I guess.
It would, yeah. I think if you look at the Department of Finance forecast, they're kind of conservative enough in the light of what you're saying about the corporation tax rate going up, and they kind of see corporation tax topping out and falling back in one of the years. And that obviously is an allowance for the other part of the OECD process, which, as you say, seems to have broken down and looks unfixable. But as you say, it is possible, maybe likely, that some countries will go their own way on that, and that could affect revenue here. So I think we're gone from a period when everything was, the wind was behind us on all fronts on corporation tax, to a much more mixed picture now.
Yeah, sure. What did the SPU tell us about their spending plans? Because everybody wants more money spent on healthcare, on education, on housing, you name it.
Spending going to keep going up. Day-to-day spending, I mean, there's allowances there for spending to increase by 5%-ish. I think Pascal Donoghue has indicated that, I don't think we'll see the 5% rule adhered to this year again. There may be some argument there about whether how once-off things and how temporary things play into that, and how versus permanent spending and whatever. The Financial Council, obviously, or the Fiscal Advisory Council, should I say, had a go at them last year for what they called, fiscal gimmickry, which I don't think went down very well at the Department of Finance or the Department of Public Spending either. It was pretty harsh. But look, I suppose with a general election coming up, they'll risk the wrath of the Fiscal Advisory Council rather than go short on spending in health and education. So we're going to see, we're on a road now to a bigger state, to more state spending on housing, health, education, everywhere. That's not going to stop next year with the Exchequer surplus there. There'll be pressure to probably to spend even a bit more on budget day, and it's going to keep going.
And with an election looming, they can't pull back, can they? They have to be expansionary.
No, they can't pull back, and they won't pull back. Nor do I think it's realistic to expect them to. But equally, you might hope that they don't try and, quotes, buy the election by a whole load of kind of temporary goodies, because I suppose a lot of the temporary payments, we needed the temporary payments during COVID, and we needed a lot of them during the cost of living crisis as well. And we were lucky in that the Fluhulach state of corporation tax allowed us to pay for that. And I think that was, they're once-off things. I think that was, largely legitimate and reasonable. And, the budget has stayed in surplus nonetheless. But we're unlikely to have, that huge corporation tax overperformance again to pay for another round of pre-election budgetary madness, So I think the odds are that the negotiations are going to be tricky for the summer economic statement and afterwards. And there's going to be a bit of a reality check about the impact of setting up these two funds and what they mean for the budget. I don't think the political system has fully taken that on board yet, but it will face it shortly.
Cliff Taylor, thank you for joining us.
Thanks, Kieran.
Okay, that's it for this week from Inside Business. My thanks to Dermot Good and Cliff Taylor for joining me on the show. John Casey produced this episode with JJ Vernon on sound. Thanks also to our sponsor EY for its continued support. Remember, as a subscriber to the Irish Times, you can get the latest business news straight into your inbox by signing up to our Business Today email at irishtimes.com. And you can also follow the Irish Times business feed on X, LinkedIn and Facebook each day. I'm Kieran Hancock. Until next time, take care.
The Irish Times Inside Business Podcast, in association with EY, building a better working world.